So I grew up in a household of voting day volunteers. Everybody in my household was up and doing something on an election day. It might have meant driving people to the polls. It might have meant getting people assigned to go work at the election polls, which for us was just at the church up the block.
Detroiter Candace Fortman has always had busy election days. But there are signs that Black voters in the city are mobilizing like they haven't in a while. That could be a game changer on Election Day next week. This is the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. We know that the margin of Black voters who stayed home in 2016 was greater than Donald Trump's margin of victory in Michigan. But the picture looks pretty different this year. The Michigan director for the progressive nonprofit America Votes said something kind of stunning on Twitter yesterday. Now, you probably already know that tons of people, 3 million Michiganders, requested absentee ballots this year. But check this out. Nearly 380,000 of these outstanding ballots are for voters who did not vote in 2016. And 21% of the requests came from voters of color. So Detroit is everything in this race, or could be. Candace Fortman is a lifelong Detroiter, and she's also executive director of Outlier Media. And she volunteered to work the polls this year. Hey, Candace, good to talk to you.
I'm happy to be here.
I am super curious to hear what the process has been like, if only because we're hearing these reports that more people are volunteering for the polls and everybody's aware that there's concern about there being enough people to serve everybody who wants to vote. Did you go to a meeting where they were training you?
Yes. So I have already done my training. I did it about 2 weeks ago at Wayne County Community College on Outer Drive. And I was assigned to be a ballot inspector. So I will be the person who helps you put your ballot into the tabulator, which is funny for me because that is the part as a voter that gives me the most stress, that I'm always going to mess that part up. And so I think this is karma's ultimate reward, is getting me to be in charge of that process inside of a precinct. But the training was about 2 hours long. We came in and everyone had to go and wash their hands. Everyone's temperature was taken. And then you went into a classroom where you, of course, were separated, maybe into a row just by yourself. And from there, you were trained on not just the process of how to work the tabulator, understanding, of course, you know, the process of voting, but also the process of voting inside of COVID, which is very different than it has been in any other year. Sanitizing the equipment. Can you deny someone the access to vote if they're not wearing a mask? Of course you can't. Can you deny someone access to voting if they come in and they are ill? Of course you cannot. And so making sure that everybody in the room understands that although this is a different year for our entire country, this is still a democratic process. And we need to ensure that everyone who comes in to vote can do that.
Yeah. I was wondering what the age range was like in the room. I feel like every time I've gone to vote in person, there's so many church ladies who are there doing the work and making sure that we all have the opportunity to cast a ballot. Is that the case this year?
It was not. And it was noticeable. I would say the average age of the person in the room, and this is just me, you know, looking at faces, was probably somewhere maybe in their late 20s to early 30s. There were some older women maybe, but even much younger than what we're used to. I'm used to working with ladies who are in their 70s and 80s. I think maybe the oldest person in the room might have been in their 60s.
Let's pull back a little bit and just talk about the broader climate for voting. If you had to guess among folks that you've talked to, just people that you interact with every day, how many people would you guess have already done the deed, have voted at on-demand absentee and they're done?
Well, I love to use my social media feed as a gauge for the climate of the folks that I know. And if it is a good climate, many of them have already voted. I see folks going to the clerk's office on the boulevard in Detroit. I see people who are going to the satellite offices that are situated across the city. There are about 21 of them in Detroit. I'm seeing people who have mailed in ballots, who are ensuring that they, you know, are getting their elders' ballots to drop boxes. So I'm seeing a lot of talk about early voting. I'm seeing a push for early voting. which is an interesting thing because we know that there is a sordid history with Black people in this country and elections. And so going into a poll really does help you ensure, at least in your mind, that your vote has been counted. And so to see this push for early voting and for absentee voting, even inside of Detroit, inside of the Black community in Detroit, has been very interesting to watch unfold. I even have a neighbor about three doors down that has a sign in their yard that says, "We voted early, so should you."
Do you hear people worrying about the chance of contagion if they have to show up to vote in person?
I don't. I am not hearing that as much as I thought I would. I think that people are going to be safe and as cautious as they can be if they do decide to go in next Tuesday. You know, in the city, people are wearing masks. People are, you know, washing their hands. They're using hand sanitizer. They're as distant as they can be because, you know, April, Detroit was hit so hard in March and April. We lost so many dear community members. And I really do think that we're in a place of care right now where we're trying to keep that from happening again. And I just don't see that same concern because I really do believe that folks are going to do what they need to do on their end to keep themselves safe and their neighbors safe.
I was wondering how you were feeling about that, too. That was kind of sobering what you were telling us about, you know, just reminding that someone may be sick and they may show up to vote. And that doesn't mean that they're going to be turned away. You're not worried about your own health right now?
Yes. I think that I've been worried since March, but this is bigger for me than any one illness. And that is a hard concept, even in my own head, to think about. As much as I've protected myself and kept myself away from loved ones, away from friends, this moment in our history is so critical and so important. And so I feel like it is necessary for me to risk perhaps getting sick. But I also know that I'm going to do everything I can on my end to keep myself well. I'm going to, of course, do that also, not just to keep myself safe, but to keep the folks that come into the precinct safe. I'm going to sanitize as much as I can, just like I do in my own home. And also, I'm going to, you know, keep my faith strong. I think that it has guided me over these last 7 months, and I hope that it keeps me safe while I am in that election poll.
I wanted to come back to the stat that I threw out a couple minutes ago, that nearly a quarter of the absentee on-demand ballots that were requested came from people who didn't vote 4 years ago and who were also African-American voters. Do you read anything into the tea leaves there?
Well, yes. I was just having a conversation with a friend that I would really love to see some research around voting and movements. So what did voting numbers look like during the civil rights movement? What did they look like during the Vietnam War movement? And what are we seeing that is connecting those two to this moment we're in right now? I think that, you know, if I was a tea leaf reader, and I am not, but if I could be for a second, I think that what we're seeing is a critical moment for African Americans living in this country, living in the state, and living in Detroit, where folks might not feel as moved to vote in any given election because they might not see themselves reflected in policies and in changes that happen. But this is one of those things where folks might just think that their safety, that their protections inside of this country are on that ballot in a much more real way. And so stepping up in voting is something that they might feel encouraged to do. I'd be interested to see what happens once we get all of the numbers back. Is Black voting up? I hope it is, because we're at a critical moment in our history.
It's time for a quick break. When we get back, how the devastating toll the pandemic has had in the city is shaping Black Detroiters' choices this election.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
There have been numerous efforts by both sides to win over Black voters for the presidential contest through the spring and the summer and now. Joe Biden's message has really focused on what he says is a failure on Donald Trump's part to control the pandemic. Do you see that as effective messaging for voters in the city?
I definitely think that's effective. You know, I said earlier in this conversation that Detroiters were impacted so deeply by COVID. Both the folks that we lost, the people who were sick, the people who remain sick, there are many who are still suffering from side effects, from illnesses, from the illness, and they caught it in April or May. What happened here with COVID, not just with people getting sick, but with people losing jobs, the stress on families to figure out how to keep their kids mentally happy, also in school, the toll has been heavy. And for there to not have been a national plan that unfolded when you watched, you know, places in Europe, when you watched what happened in New Zealand and in Asian nations, and you saw what happened when a national plan was enacted, and to watch us not have that and continue to lose loved ones, continue to lose neighbors. I don't think that there are many Black people in Detroit who won't be taking that issue to the ballot box with them.
There have been moments when Joe Biden got flack for suggesting that the Democratic Party was the only real choice for Black voters.
But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't Black.
But we've also heard Donald Trump talk in ways that have assumptions baked in about what Black voters care about.
You're living in poverty. Your schools are no good. You have no jobs. 58% of your youth is unemployed. What the hell do you have to lose?
Candace, what are the divisions that you see among Black voters who very often get lumped in together on both sides of the political divide?
Yeah. So I would say the education is a big one and jobs are big. There is a split inside of our communities around those who consider themselves, you know, educated working class. And then those who are in the plant still, especially in a place like Detroit. And when you are talking to, when you are using employment, for instance, as a campaign message, are you talking to folks that are in the auto plants? Are you talking to union members? So for instance, if I remember the first time I told my grandfather I was going to leave a job of my own will, he thought that was the craziest thing he'd ever heard, because he had come up through a union job at GM where he stayed for 29 years and 7 months, and then he retired. That was the world that he was brought up in. I, of course, and you don't live in that world. This is a very different America than the one that our grandparents or parents were brought up in. And so when people are voting for older Black Americans, they are still carrying this idea of sort of a unionized America where you can go and work a job and retire and live a good, prosperous life. But for those of us who have gone to college and carry a lot of student loan debt, or those of us who know that even if you are going to those union jobs, they don't pay the same as they did when my grandfather was going through GM. There are different questions on that ballot that we're trying to get answered around working in America and what it means to be a working American, and especially what it means to be a working Black American. And it is a difference between generational lines, but it's also a difference in sort of the class lines that have been set up. And for those of us who have gone to college and are carrying tons of student loan debt, there is no route to retirement that looks clear for us. That is so different than the life that my grandfather thought he was building for his family when he was working that job at GM. I think that he'd be hard pressed to see his American dream inside of my life.
There is so much information flying at people's faces right now. These all caps instructions from our leaders in our social feeds, you know, wear your mask, do physical distance. Oh, by the way, answer the census. Be there for the kids. Look out for your neighbors. Look out for the grandmas and the grandpas in your neighborhood. And I mean, there's a part of me that just wonders where voting falls in with all this, especially since some folks, you know, have challenges in their pocketbooks right now. Do you ever run across people who, you know, thinking about not voting this year? I'm curious about what they might say about that.
Yeah. So I have actually only seen one person on social media willing to say aloud that they were not going to vote, because and it didn't come down to messaging. It really came down to them not being able to vote for what they felt like was just voting for two different sides of a bad coin, where none of their immediate needs would be addressed. And this is a person who has been unemployed during this COVID crisis, and they just don't see themselves and their immediate issues reflected in any of the campaign messaging that they're hearing. And I think that that doesn't get at the amount of oversaturation of messaging that folks are experiencing right now. But it does get at this critical question that both parties really have to ask themselves. And that is, how are you going to actually provide the things that your constituents are asking you for? And these are very simple things. They are asking you to keep them safe. They are asking you to keep them employed. They are asking you to keep their children well educated. Those are not things that, you know, are outside the realm of possibility. But I think on both sides are asking for those things. How those candidates decide to approach those conversations, especially in targeted communities like, you know, the Black community, is going to be something that I think won't show up as much in this election as it is in the next 4 years. If we do not address those things, the next election that this country has is going to be a very interesting one.
Oh, Candace.
Not to say that this
one
is not.
I just can't.
Not to say that this is not an interesting election, because it certainly is.
You are the only person I know brave enough to even go there about 2024.
I tell people that I deal with crisis by moving way past the immediate crisis to the next crisis. Because it just reminds me that we're always ebbing and flowing through things. There's this Frankie Beverly and May song, you know, where it talks about joy and pain. Joy and pain are like sunshine and rain. You need both. And I think that 2020 has shown us clearly that those two things come together. We've had a lot of pain in our community. We've also had a lot of joy in taking care of one another. And I don't think that anything brings that together more clearly than an election day.
In case you needed any more proof that this voting bloc, Black Detroiters, matter to the Democrats' chances next week, the Biden campaign just announced they are coming back to Michigan this weekend in the final stretch with none other than former President Barack Obama. If Democrats learned anything from the nonchalant Clinton campaign 4 years ago, it's that showing up matters in Michigan. That's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's show was produced by April Van Buren, with help from Jen Guerra and Rachel Ishikawa. Music by Blue Dot Sessions. The Stateside theme is by 14KT. You can find the full Stateside show at michiganradio.org. We'll see you tomorrow.